Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh, hello, my fine friends. It's me, Richard Herring. Welcome to another Rahulastapa. I'm currently on location in Wales, where I'm filming in this beautiful castle, Magram Castle, near Port Talbot, I think I am. I'm not sure. There are deer out here. Can't see any at the moment. There's a train over there. But welcome to another episode of Rahulastapa. This week with the amazing Nina Conti. With a lot of discussion about ventriloquism and who is the best ventriloquist out of me and her. And I don't think you'll be left in any doubt who it is after this. Why not consider becoming a monthly badger? GoFasterStripe.com/badges to get loads of extras and to help us make more content. Check out my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/HardGateHerring, where I'll be back with loads more stuff, including my stupid ventriloquist show, if this whets your appetite, on Thursday nights. Okay, my fan friends, sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahulastapa with the magnificent and absolute genius Nina Conti. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who is sitting in a chair. God, it's really lost all impetus. It's already lockdown three and I'm already, that's it, that's as good as it gets. It's Richard Herring. Hello, welcome to Richard Herring's Let's Sing the Proclaimers podcast. I'm going to do a bit about the Proclaimers in a second, and that's why it's so cheap, because the P should always stand for podcast. But I was hanging out with Traegard from Nightmare. There he is, he's right behind me. Can you see him? Look. He lured me into his dungeon. He said he wanted me to try out his helmet of justice. Didn't turn out how I expected. Anyway, he calls it Rahulastapa, so that's what that's about. And so he's in the background. Anyway, lockdown three has arrived, and quite depressing. I'm assuming the people listening to the podcast are still in lockdown. Even the people listening 6 or 7 months time from this. Hello, welcome to whatever lockdown you're in now.
Homeschooling is back. This is a disaster. And it's nice, though. It's nice to be around the kids. The kids have been have got into the Proclaimers. I don't know how they did this. My wife's been playing I'm Going to Be That 500 Miles, and they march around the kitchen. So I've listened to this song a lot. And although the Proclaimers are rubbish at doing the proper Scotch accent that I can do, or that it's almost offensive, their attempt at the Scotch accent, I think it's genuinely a brilliant love song. It's a brilliant pop song. It's just a brilliant song. It's properly romantic. It's passionate and mainly realistic. And that's what I like about it. The Proclaimers will go out and work and give almost every penny to their partner slash partners. I'm not sure if they share a partner, which is more honest than saying every penny. You also get the feeling the Proclaimers like each other more than they'd like anyone else, but it's still a fabulous song and sentiment. But I just, as every time I listen to it, I just wonder if their partner slash partners have ever called them out on it. Going, go on, the Proclaimers. Let's see you do it. Then walk 500 miles and then 500 more. I don't mind if you use the second 500 to come back here from wherever the first 500 took you, or you can just walk 1,000 miles and get a bus back. I'm not bothered. But you said you'd do it, and I think you should. Hey, but listen, it was just a figure of speech, man. Stop talking in that ridiculous accent, guys. It's a bit offensive. You've done all the other stuff you'd said you'd do, except maybe not the havering. I mean, you might have done that. I don't know what it is. But you haven't done the walking 1,000 miles to prove how much you love me, and I've decided I'd just like to check. So off you pop. I mean, they'd have to do it, right? They said they would. I've checked the internet to see if the Proclaimers have ever walked 500 miles and then 500 more, which I think they should at least have done for charity. But there's lots of people asking if it's possible to walk 500 miles from Leith. But of course it's fucking possible, because the Proclaimers don't say, I will walk 500 miles in a straight line and then 500 more miles. They could just go around the block as long as they've got a pedometer. Are you saying Captain Tom didn't walk all the way, he said, because he just went around his garden? You monsters. It's a brilliant song nonetheless. And the kids larking around during it. It's one of my great memories. It's my first great memory of lockdown 3. That's the beauty of it. So that's nice. We'll carry on doing all this. The Twitch channel is carrying on as usual. I'm playing snooker on Mondays and Twitch of fun on Thursdays, which I'm trying, you know, now we've got lockdown, I'll try and make that ever more sophisticated. Other stuff may turn up. If you listen to the podcast, you can watch the rehearsal of us live, usually on Wednesdays. And I might be doing a gig at the Clapham Grand in February. No one's allowed to come, but you can watch it online. Anyway, let's welcome my guest. She is probably best known from Channel 4's The Feeling Nuts Comedy Night. That's what she's also been heralded as the UK's second best ventriloquist. Oh god, I mean, I've just been watching it today, and you know, I've been making that joke a lot, and I feel ashamed of myself, because she is amazing. Will you please welcome the amazing Nina Conti, ladies and gentlemen? She's there, look, that's
hi
her. Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Second best. So who's first? Is that Paul
Burden? I'm the best.
Oh, you're the best.
It's me.
Yeah, but you're obviously the best.
I'm making a joke, and then having checked and to see how good you are, I realise the thing you do that I can't yet do all the time, though sometimes I forget about it, is not pull the face of the thing that the puppet is saying, and that's the main difference.
I think. That takes a while, doesn't it? But maybe your puppet is more impassioned than mine, because that's when it's hardest to disguise the emotion behind it.
I did a Christmas one where I did songs, and I kind of did a few takes of them because it wasn't live. And there's one of the characters that has it's a donkey. It's actually this is when I started doing ventriloquism. This is my first ever ventriloquist dummy. It's a donkey finger puppet. Its ears have come off, but it looks like, why can't I die. So he's shouting, and then I had to sing this song three times, and my voice had completely gone, and my whole face is just like, I'm in so much agony as I'm singing. I used the first take in the end, even though it was bad, because I couldn't bear to do that. But yes, it's been interesting coming to ventriloquism. I've thought about you all the way through, of course, because, you know, I don't want to step on your toes, Nina.
Get off my patch. Yeah,
you must be really quaking in your boots.
down, Richard. Got a rolled up newspaper, and I'm hitting you down.
I'm self training. I'm not. My granddad, when I got into ventriloquism, I'll show you my ventriloquist dummy now. I was doing ventriloquism probably before you were born, not quite. In 1986 or 87, I had this hat. So my granddad gave me, there's two of them.
Jesus Christ.
That's Ali. He's got a joke. That's his joke. His hair goes up like that. Look at that. That's a 128-year-old joke. He's made in 1892.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so I've been, there's a lady one called Sally. There she is. I don't use her as much, but she's a... Their teeth have fallen out. So
have they got human teeth in them? Because
They have this. I think I've brought. She has teeth, but some of them are broken off, and I think I've broken those, and so I'm quite upset about that. His mouth.
What were you trying to do?
Well, there's a long history with this one, which we've been into a few times on this podcast, which we won't go into with you because this is a family podcast. Puppets weren't a big part of your childhood, right? They weren't from listening to other interviews, or were they?
No, not at all. Actually, and ventriloquism was something I was like, from a distance, depressed by. But I didn't really know it. I didn't really know the good stuff. I sort of knew the kind of kids ITV stuff in the 80s, which wasn't like, it wasn't a turn on. No. But then this really weird thing happened. This little Super 8 video just surfaced from my uncle's collection. Right. And it was taken when I was 7 or something, little. And I come bounding out the house. There's no music. There's no talking. I mean, there's no sound. I come bounding out the house and I've got a monkey on my hand. And it is the same proportional size as my monkey is to me now. And I got a real shudder. When I saw that, I was just like, no, what's that? That's somebody faked that. That's so weird because I don't remember that puppet.
Right.
And there he is in my past. So freaky.
Wow. So he's been there all along.
Yeah.
And you've repressed the memory for some reason. I mean, there's a lot of memories I should repress about my ventriloquist dummy, but I remember them all. Some terrible things have happened to me with those dummies.
I remember meeting Monkey first, if you could call it that, when I had stolen him off a friend of mine, and then I used to make him hump things is what I did. This is before I was a ventriloquist. I just thought this thing's funny when it humps, look. And then when I learned ventriloquism, I thought, oh, that humping monkey, he might be a good dummy. So I went and got him. And when I did his voice for the first time, it was a moment like, you know, it was a moment like the film Magic. So it was a bit like, you know me, like this, you're already there. And you know, so I did have a moment.
So
like
did
that.
You have the voice straight, the same voice more or less straight away? Or was it? Straight
I don't remember trying many voices. Right. I got to say, he spoke with it that me. Well, you know, you see a face and you think, how would it talk? And I thought it should have a sort of low, important voice. As low as I can go.
I've always been fascinated by. I mean, I've always been fascinated by puppets. The more I look at it, all the shows I loved as kids were the puppet shows. This Twitch show I'm doing is sort of homage, like taking down slash I don't know what copy of all the kind of things that I saw as a kid, really, but just done sort of by a madman in an attic in a sort of postmodern, you know, going mad sort of way.
Yeah.
But I've always, from that very first donkey, that's the first laugh I remember getting is doing a show with that donkey and a little horse behind the sofa and my nan and then my mum really laughing. So that literally is the first thing that, so I've always had this somewhere around.
Did he always say, I can't die? Or what was
it? No, because I pulled off his ear. So obviously at some point I pulled off his ear. So when I found him, he was in a tin and I kept him and I just thought, you know, he must resent me so much I kind of looked it up on eBay and I bought the proper ones. Oh, I can't wait. Where is he? Oh, there he is. And so here's somebody who's looked up. Well, then this one. They're 50 years old, these puppets. They haven't even, that's not been out the box. No one's ever played with it.
Right.
And that's what he should look like. So I've pulled off his ears.
Well, I mean, but, you know, neither of them look anything like a donkey, particularly.
No, his ears have gone a bit white. But, you know, they've got a dichotomy between them in that he's loved and played with and destroyed and he's been in a box for 50 years and not, and you know, who should be saddest out of those two, but it's him, is the answer. But, I find it interesting having, cause I keep on getting sent puppets or finding, I have a Marmite lid that has a face on it that I do, you know, I'll just bring you up to speed. That's my Marmite lid. There was someone that he's a character. He tries to do stand-up comedy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere. I'm looking at that. I think my headphones, oh, yes. You know, with a little, we got, that's almost one.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
good.
they're very available to you once you start looking.
But what you do, but this is what you do though in your, I mean, your current act or your latest act, you can't do it currently, I'm sure, on stage. Although there are masks involved. I think the masks are probably the most dangerous masks for spreading COVID. But you basically turn an audience member into or audience members into your dummies. And then I'm guessing you just look at them and you're creating the character on the hoof, or do you have sort of stock characters you go with? Because they seem to be straight out of the box. You get who that you see them and you work out who they're going to be.
Yeah, so it's only exciting if you do that, really. I think you try and say what you think they're thinking, even if it's, this is just awful. When can I sit down? Whatever it is. I used to go against type and think, well, that would be funny if someone meek says, I'm going to dance and let me go crazy. But then I started to find it funnier when I didn't go against type and I just try and get an alignment, see where they lead me, and then it's much more fun.
I've been watching quite a bit of it today, and it's amazing. It's very entertaining. It's wonderful how people join in, or even if they don't join in, it's still wonderful. But if they join in a little bit, or it's sometimes they're joining in a lot. And it's a really lovely bit of audience participation, I think, in that it's not humiliating, but people can join in. But I just love the way the voices come and you've got the voice and you've got the character straight away based on looking at it. But I think that's one of the characters I've got is this, is literally this. Now, this is a puppet we made for something else and we never really used. And then it got Chris Evans, not that one, the one we've been talking to beforehand, sent it to me in the post. It's King Midas, right? I had a character called King Midas that we wanted to bring back, then we never did. And then he arrived in a box, and I was with my kids when I got him out of the box. And I just got him out of the box, and he went, ha-ha, I'm the king of the world! And that was just the character. The kids really loved it.
Right, yeah.
He just kept on saying, I'm the king of the world.
Yeah, and sometimes that's all you need is one line.
Yeah. But it was like he was there, and he came out, and he was speaking, and it wasn't it didn't feel like a conscious decision by me to make him that.
It's interesting, isn't it? I was listening to Stephen King talking about writing on his On Writing book, and he's saying, like, in fiction, the worst thing you can do is lie. Don't lie when you're writing. And it's the same with a puppet. You think you could lie and make it say, but you know when you are. You know when it doesn't like what you're making it say, or when you say the thing that suits it. It feels like you're lying when you're, I don't know, if I make Monkey say something or someone else has written it, I'm like, he's not, no, sure. You can't say this. Weird.
I mean, it's now, look, I always had this theory, and you, I hope, I mean, we don't know what you're like in your personal life, but I'm assuming you are the exception that proves the rule. And I'm hoping that I'm also the exception that proves the rules. But it seems to me most ventriloquists are either pretty crazy or are sort of slightly dangerous offenders of some kind.
Mm.
And do you think they were like that first, or do you think that the being a ventriloquist sent them mad and slightly bad?
I think there's a therapeutic thing about it, actually. So maybe they were worse before. I don't know. I think it's, well, I mean, I've been to the ventriloquist convention and met hundreds of them, and they're very, like, actually kind of sweet people. Very accepting, and also quite happy to be in the shadow, and they'll meet in corridors and let their ostriches talk to each other and stuff. It's sort of sweet. They're like dog owners.
Do you think is it a step back to? I mean, that's what there's loads and loads of interesting things, and I think it's sort of the essence of comedy. It's about, is it stepping back to play as a kid? I watch my 3-year-old, and he has his dolls, and he'll go, and they're having a little conversation. Uh-huh. Are we stepping back to that? Are we finding something sort of pure and childlike in that?
I was very quiet at school. I think when I first got to school, I did stand in the playground and wait for break time to end. I mean, I'm not trying to get any sympathy here. I was unsocialized. I'd not played with other kids and didn't know what they were. And I remember just standing thinking, I got to just get through this day. And hopefully, you know, it took me ages to talk to anyone. So I feel like what I've done in my show is create a playground where I'm completely in charge. And no one else gets to talk, only me. It's a sick vendetta. I don't know. I mean, it definitely helps express it. That's the obvious thing. It helps you express yourself if you're a little bit, I don't know, inhibited. It really releases. But as you get older, you care less. So I'm kind of less in need of it in my 40s than I was in my 20s. Right. In my 20s, it was like, oh, finally, you know, a pen I can write with. Finally, a thing, I can.
But it's sort of like, comedy, I feel, is as a stand-up, I think you've still got that. You've got a voice in your head that is either, sometimes it's criticizing you. Sometimes you bring it out and let it speak. And sometimes it's just going, say this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like you, right? And so yeah. I think, maybe if you were shy of being a stand-up or you didn't fancy being a stand-up, the idea of having another being either a character, you can play a character and let that character say things that you wouldn't say, or you've got this little thing that sort of, but I just find it interesting the way once you get into a conversation with a puppet, a mannequin, a dummy, whatever you want to call them, that it can surprise you, that it says things you're not expecting.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get to the point where I've forgotten a person or something, both ways around actually, but he will know what, he'll give me the answer to what I'm talking about, which I guess happens when you're trying to think of something, when you're trying to think of a fact or something like that and you can't think of it. Sometimes not thinking about it, you find it.
Similar.
So it's sort of like your subconscious, but it's, you're having a conversation with, I mean, it's great in a lot because I've been in double acts and, it's annoying having to be with someone else, really. It's great to be able to do it. And when I started doing it, I thought, I'll review the news. I'll do it like the one, review the podcast. I used to review the news with someone else. And I thought, but will that work? Because, he would ask me about the news and I would have a different opinion to him. But then it does sort of work with the dummies. Because
we can have two opinions, all of us anyway.
It's like that. But does Monkey or any of them, do they surprise you with what they're saying, or do you?
Yeah.
Are you always in control?
I am in control, so it's not a total shock. But sometimes it's a bit of a revelation, or you think, well, why couldn't I think of that until I put my hand into fluff, and now I've thought of it, and I think that's downright weird. And I think it's to do with letting yourself off the hook, definitely. You're not pressing, your brain's in the way of yourself all the time if you're pressing too hard. Yeah. And so you sort of turn it off a bit and come at it from a different angle. And when I'm writing, I've been writing my autobiography for so long now, God, longer than the life I'm writing about. But I sometimes get quite stuck and think, oh God, I'm just whining. And so I have occasionally put Monkey on and then he'll just say the thing and I go, thank you, put him down and then carry on.
Okay.
Really helps.
That is good. And I think what's astonishing about your latest shows is that they're completely improvised.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which, and I can understand a lot of people say, oh, I'd be too scared to do stand-up. But like, at least stand-ups have the kind of safety net usually of, like, they know the material. I know there must be stuff you can do every night, but you are genuinely, the stuff I've seen, it seems genuinely improvised for the moment.
Yeah.
And that's surely a much more terrifying prospect.
It's terrifying before you go out because you can't see what you'll be working with. But once you're there, there's so much data thrown at you already. Like the person you meet who's there has a whole way about them that when they start talking, you've got things to say. It's only thinking about it before you see that stuff that's terrifying. Yeah. It's awful
before. Sure. I've been improvising all the stuff I'm doing online. I'm sort of, I'll think about it a bit in the day, but I'm basically, it turns into an improvised hour, sometimes 90 minutes of comedy. And
God.
I'm finding it very liberating, but it is giving yourself the permission to totally fail. It's going, look, it doesn't matter if this is, I'm not, no one's paying me directly to do it. So it's not quite the same as doing a theatre show. If it's a disaster, it'll still be funny. If things go wrong, it'll still be funny. But, it's, you give yourself that permission and then actually something will come out of it. And I guess because the thing you do, and I think I suppose that's slightly inevitable to do, is if it's dying, the puppet can have a mock you for the fact that it's not going very well because they can be the heckler as well. So you can sort of preempt any heckles by...
Or they can tell you that they love you and you're doing your best.
Yeah, they do that to me sometimes. Yeah, they do that. You're doing very well, given
you're trying. You know, you did try. I hate that feeling, and it's thankfully not too often, but that feeling of having to lift a show that's low, oh, it's the worst. And I end up making the other people on stage reassure me. I'm like, no, shut up. No, you're doing all right. Shut up. We can't have this conversation.
But you are astonishingly good at it. Now, did you choose to be a sort of smiley character, laughy character yourself, because that helps with the ventriloquism, or is that just, are you genuinely enjoying it as much as you appear to be enjoying it, or is that just, does that help you do the ventriloquism?
I'm in a panic of laughter throughout my shows because I kind of can't believe what's happening. I can't believe what they're saying. And it's an annoying sort of social affectation that I laugh. And that's the one thing that when I watch back my shows, I can't fucking stand it. Looking at myself laughing, I'm like, no. God, die, shut, stop, can you stop laughing? And I go like a rock like this. I think I slap my legs and I rock. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Stand still. It's horrendous to look back on. But then when I think, my very, very first foray into ventriloquism, I had a puppet a bit like yours. And I was kind of carnal in my 20s. And it's lascivious, like if my mouth's open, my tongue's kind of visible. I'm like, this is disgusting. And then the monkey's character relieved me of that.
Yes.
And is that more himself? I mean, he's not that carnal, but I don't know. It relieved me of the side I was glad to be shot of. And I was kind of, yeah, I felt it's better if I'm just sort of pure and giggly. Better.
Yeah, I think it's utterly charming. I think it's wonderful. I just wondered whether it was, I wondered if it even just helped, because obviously your mouth is a bit more, my mouth's quite closed when I'm doing my stuff usually. So your mouth's quite sort of open.
Yeah.
Because it's toothy. So I just wondered if that technically, I'm just trying to get some technical
things. I play with my hair a lot. Yeah. You know, I'll get like itches that are kind of in the way of my mouth. It's like, there's a lot of little tricks I do. If I'm coming up to a B, I probably will I'll scratch my eye or something.
But you're technically amazing. I don't think I would ever have the patience to do it. But is that a constant... Is that constant practice, or did you just kind of get there and then? Because I've noticed even sometimes when you yourself, you don't even move your lips when you talk. When you're on the Russell Howard show, you're kind of going to get, as you're going to get someone out of the audience, you're talking and you're not moving your lips and it's you.
It's so you've unfortunate. You've got so good at it. You know? Well, it's no, you're so an good extra at it, effort to use the lips when you don't need to. It's like extra muscle. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've done a little of it in my sleep, apparently. And I do this in my sleep with, apparently my hand is going like a little ghost. That's freaky, isn't it? I don't keep up the practice, that's for sure. And I just hope that it doesn't leave me. Because when I get carried away, like you know, I get carried away to stop thinking about the ventriloquism, and I can come off stage going, did I do the ventriloquism?
But it's sort of, I mean, it's, you know, it does. I know you're talking to Adam Buxton about this, and there's a fantastic Adam Buxton podcast with you that went out recently that discusses a lot of this stuff. But it sort of doesn't. I mean, I'm very much of, I mean, you said Ken Campbell thought it's more important to have the character than the technical ability. So as long as you've got the character, people know it's not real.
Yeah.
Though it's lovely when you forget for us. You know, I think the beauty of it is people do home in on the puppet and start looking at the puppet and believe it's talking, even if you're, you know, as technically inept as I am. So it's...
Totally. But all the ones from Sesame Street and stuff, when they go out with their puppets and they meet the kids and stuff, no one even cares the other person's there. They're not bothering with the ventriloquism. And I saw that happening, thought, wow, I'm really doing a lot more work than I need to do.
Well, then, you know, that's why I look back at a lot of those, especially the 70s ones. I mean, Rod Hull, Emu didn't even speak. Emu was absolutely the laziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's just grabbing at people in an inappropriate way. with his hand.
I know.
that's an act. Basil Brush, he's down behind the desk, the guy doing it. All the rainbow guys, they're in a suit or they're behind the desk doing it. Most of them don't even do it. So, you know, it's wonderful. It is really enjoyable to see someone do it brilliantly. My dad said that both his dad and his granddad, who made the puppet, would do it and just not bother trying not to move their mouths. And my dad is pleased that someone's doing it and at least making an attempt to do it properly.
Yeah, for me, it's not the main thing. And Edgar Bergen, he was a big, big one in the 40s and 50s, I think. And he did sketches with Marilyn Monroe and W.C. Fields and all kinds of people. He was awful. I mean, he was awful. His puppets were nice and they had a nice, like, they had a wistful kind of intelligent kind of relationship, but their mouth control was all over the place, but no one really minded. And then he did very well on the radio. So
yes, there's been a few radio ventriloquists, which is good.
Yeah.
My act goes out as a audio podcast, but you can watch it as well if you want.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You've got a lot of, I mean, you inherited all of Ken Campbell's, this whole thing. I think we talked about it in the Edinburgh Fringe podcast, but I'm not sure.
But people won't know. Yeah.
No. Well, so you worked with Ken Campbell, who is absolutely one of my heroes. And I used to go and see his shows and now realize that I'm now the same age as he was in the shows that I was watching.
Shocking. Yeah.
Terrifyingly. But I mean, he looked a bit older than he was, I think, but yeah, he's absolute comedy genius, and you worked with him a lot, and got close to him. And then, when he died, he left you all of his mannequins.
Yeah, he left me every single.
So how many have you got?
They were really ratty, his puppets. I mean, some of them were nice, but he lived with a parrot who had the run of the house and shit all over them, and they were, and the dogs, dog hair, and I was pulling them out thinking, well, this isn't even a puppet, is it? It looks like an old sort of cloth frozen with some gross milk substance. And then it is a puppet. So there were lots that were kind of gross, but then some of them were fantastic. And there was this puppet, which was actually supposed to be like an old man, but he had used I've forgotten her name. Who was that brilliant writer that wrote kind of repetitive poetry? Gertrude Stein.
Oh yes, yes.
He had her. He was using it as Gertrude Stein. But when I put my hand in her, she came out as my grandma. She was so like my dead grandma, and so that was like an impressive. I don't know how many there are. There must be like 12. Left, and I lent a lot of them out to people who were starting and right. That kind of thing. Some of them you sort of feel like they oughtn't to be sitting in a cupboard, really. It's nice if somebody wants to use them.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. You know, again, I'm interested in from that my very old dummy that's been used by three generations of my family, over four generations. that obviously you're doing something, you're picking it up exactly as you say, you're doing something actually, a different character comes out with the different ventriloquist. And my great-granddad would not be happy about what I'm doing with his dummy, though he might be happy that it's still, I mean, if he could get his head around what's happening, he might be happy that it's still going.
That he's in use. But is the puppet happy with this role?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah. I think the puppet seems happy to be much more sweary and unpleasant than he would have been when he was being used by a Methodist.
Well, he moves with the times, yeah.
He does. But that's, but that's sort of, because in your wonderful film, Her Master's Voice, which, again, I think we talked about last time, but is well worth seeking out if you haven't seen it. But you go to the vent heaven or whatever it's called. The
vent
the place
haven,
where all the,
yeah.
Vent haven, yeah, where all the ventriloquist dummies whose ventriloquists have died, they bequeath their, which is
and
a terrifying.
Sit, like, would they sit just staring at the ceiling and they have little pictures on their laps that have their heyday, you know, them like with an audience all laughing, and then they are like this. It's so eerie in there and moving as well.
Yeah,
some of them some survived a shipwreck, but the ventriloquist went down, and one was carved from wood in a concentration camp, and through having been entertaining, saved the ventriloquist's life. You know,
wow.
So it's quite an amazing museum.
Yeah, it is. But you're sort of aware that's the other thing when you're working with them. They will, you know, they'll move on when the time comes when you're not any longer there.
Yeah,
they will move on. They'll live another life. It seems sad to me that those dummies are put in a room, and terrifying, because they definitely come to life at night. But it seems sad that they're not passed down to someone else to use. I suppose they can't exist forever.
They can't really. And I think, I mean, the thing that spoils the poetry of the thing is that a lot of them have doubles that continue, you know.
Yes.
So I did donate Granny to that museum on behalf of Ken. Well, Gertrude Stein was her name. I donated her, but I went and ordered a duplicate.
Yes.
So I could keep,
because you've got with Monk, you've got, have you still got, you, it's a toy that's no longer available, right? Or it was a
toy. It's a bespoke toy. Don't worry, I won't do him for long, but I did right here. I'm not actually going to do him, but see, oh, it's not him. Never mind. It's not the one I thought.
Oh, really?
That was a shit occurrence. Okay, yes. He's there, you know, if we want him. But they crack here.
Right.
Like those horror films. And so you need to have new ones after a time.
And so have you got enough to keep? Because I heard on a podcast you said you got enough for 20 years, but that podcast was about 8 years ago. So have you got enough for 12 years, or have you managed to locate some more?
Well, ones that I like, because the different factory lines, they're just a little bit, some of them look cute too much, and I like him looking a little bit fed up. So, I've got, the way things are going now, there's no gigging, you know, bagging myself an extra year on the end.
Yes, that's true. How have you coped with this? I mean, there's no way you could do what I'm doing. And do it online, but because yours has become such an interactive show.
I do Monkey now. Obviously, I can't do the masks, but I've been doing, me and Monkey have had some nice Zoom gigs. When you've got a front row to work with, that's nice, and you just chat. And I found that when you're doing material, I mean, I stop through that way pretty quick, because that just looks lonely and weird, and you're forcing people into watching you do an act. I don't know. I found it a bit weird. Yeah. And I found that, like, the chatting and the live stuff that's how I do a better Zoom gig.
Right. It's interesting because I made a decision in lockdown to not throw away all my stand-up that I'd done so far and start again.
Yeah.
So I've done two live gigs. I've done two gigs on stage with an audience. But I've taken Ali with me both times, the old dummy, and tried to do it, but I haven't. It sort of petered out pretty quickly, because I thought I won't do an act, but I have the confidence online to just blather on, but on stage I kind of clammed up and thought, oh no, okay, all right, I'll do 2 minutes and then I'll put them away again. So I haven't quite got to that. I haven't overcome that hurdle of going, let's just roll with it. and see if I can do this on stage.
Yeah.
Because that, I guess when you do have an audience there, it's good because you can interact with them. But also, you know, the good thing about Twitch is I don't know if people are liking it or not, you know. So
they don't get to thumbs down us.
No, I'm living in blissful ignorance.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's funny. I mean, if you don't pose the question, I'm not sure this is goes on from what we were saying. If you don't ask the puppet the question like it's going to know the answer, if you don't believe in it a bit and commit fully to the stupidity of what you're doing, you have to commit to it. Say, what do you think, monkey? You won't get the answer. Yeah. You know, if you're like doing it for yourself or something, I don't think you'll get a freshness. So you have to be a bit, you have to be a little bit weird with it, I think, for it to become interesting.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I will persist. But like the thing for me is that I'm so, it's so fragile already, this puppet, that I'm sort of, and there's no way back. I was saying this to you beforehand, but there's, if I break it, or if I lose it, or it gets stolen in a theatre, there's no other one of these that I can whip out. And even if you did, I mean, I'm quite interested in their perspective. I've got a carrot. I don't think I have him to hand. Who is a phallic carrot who comes from a new story, but we've had him made now. Right. But here he is. He's a cocky carrot. Did somebody say cock? And he sort of just does double entendres, but then I keep on telling him that he's made out of resin and that his eyes can't see and stuff, and then he has this existential crisis as he tries to work out how he believes he can see and think.
Oh,
and I'm telling
good
him
for him. Yeah.
And he's he used to be a real carrot, but then he kept on rotting. He's about the fourth one, because I used to do it with real carrots that I just stuck eyes to. And then I finally had this one made, and he's confused because he thinks I'm the real carrot. He's a real carrot.
So, but it's brave, Richard, that you do it with ones that don't have moving mouths.
I know. Well, he just moves around like that. Well, I've got a wasp. I do have a wasp. I mean, that was dead on the desk. So I don't know if it's brave, Nina. It's just not. It's not very good.
It's very serious. You're not taking it so seriously.
The man asked me. The man who made it, Richard Eisen, who's brilliant, who made that Prince Andrew I showed you as well. He said, "Do you want me to put a mouth on it?" And I said, "No, I don't think it should, because carrots don't have mouths." That'd be great. But eyes, googly eyes. He would have eyes.
I like it. I mean, I think that's, I like it. I find it funny, something that just wiggles.
Yeah, it's me too. Well, but you might not be old enough to remember Michael Bentine, but Michael Bentine did Michael Bentine's Potty Time, which a lot of it was just like bits of sand. They were like tiny people in a sand pit, and they were so tiny you couldn't see them, but sand would fly up. I can't remember that much about it. I used to love it when I was about three or four, but I think it will predate your childhood even. So
I didn't see it, but
it's more about the, you know, creating some madness. But I think that's, I love all the, you know, it's about the madness of the person doing it and the person and the characters he or she is creating. I think that's where you've always, you know, you've taken it to another level, I think, in terms of what was happening with ventriloquism before you came along.
What I had to do in the end was, because Monkey was saying what I really thought, and I was like this fake addendum, or not adjunct to the real thing, and I thought, I don't need this bit. It's like she could be removed from the act. And then I had a full-size monkey costume made, and I went in the monkey and did stand-up. And for me, I was like, we've trimmed the fat off this act now. And the first time I went out, I did an hour of improvised stand-up in this monkey suit. Apart from the oxygen being really a problem, I found it so liberating, and I felt like, fuck, I can do stand-up. It didn't, you know, I needed to know for me that I could do that. And then after that, people started to get cross. And I did a gig at the Udderbelly, and there were so many complaints that were asking, is Nina okay? She never came out the suit. Is this, what was this? Like some kind of sick joke? Was it even her? What was, it was so funny. It was so upsetting, because I was like thinking, yes, this is pure. This is, and everyone wanted Nina back. I was like, why do you want her back? She wasn't like bringing anything.
It's not true. But now the act that I've been watching you on online, mainly doing this today, you don't need any of the dummies. You know, you're creating your own. That's even cheaper. You're just creating dummies out of human beings.
Yes,
and God, making characters up as you go along.
Yeah, I miss them. I miss I really do. I miss that thing of being able to play with the audience and having like a night that's special to all of you, that it was only that one show, that one night, and everybody kind of loves each other by the end. It's such a nice thing. But one day.
Well, it'll be back. It will be back. But yeah. I think it's interesting that people worry. I mean, I'm really playing with that though, the idea that I might be having a mental breakdown, and I'm not entirely sure I'm not. I don't think I am, but of course I wouldn't if I was. But do you find people are worried about your mental health when they watch you, or do they?
They do. They're definitely, I think people do often ask, are you okay? And I think, yes, of course I am. It's an act. I'm doing this for money and I've created this. It's by design. And then it's funny because I have a therapist, been in therapy for 3 years, and I talk, and I'm not as well as I think I am, really. I mean, and it's quite funny because often my therapist will say, well, what would Monkey say? And I go, fuck, do you know what? I'm lying. I'm lying to you. I'm even lying to me. I didn't even know I was lying about this to myself until you asked me what would Monkey say.
And it's interesting, but I think you get that within, because it's the voice. I think stand-up plays this role as well to an extent. Like a stand-up comedian will tell a story that reflects badly on them and people will go, oh, phew, that's happened to someone else. You know, it's not just me. That all of us are keeping up this pretense and all of us have thoughts that are awful, or that we don't want to share with other people, or that are pornographic, or that are racist, or the unpleasant things you can think.
Those thoughts can occur, but they don't mean that they're your thoughts that you stand by. No. The brain just like drumming up stuff all the time.
But to hear someone voice it, or to have a thing voicing it, and the voice that will Monk often just points up your hypocrisy or tells the truth about says something that you yourself wouldn't reveal about yourself.
He
will reveal for you. And I think that's it. It's I know when you started out that Daniel Kitson was sort of rude to you, or thought it was cheap. I think a lot of stand-ups feel that having a prop of any kind is somehow cheating or not the real deal, right? But I just think what you're doing is so another level to most stand-up comedians. Any stand-up comedian is giving you a hard time.
That chip off my shoulder, though.
Fucking idiot. But it doesn't matter about them, because what you're, because you're doing an act that is philosophical, psychological therapy, but also is very entertaining as well. I think that's the important thing. And I don't think it matters. I think sometimes comedians can feel like, oh, being entertaining is somehow, not right.
Cheap.
It's cheap, but it's not cheap. What I really love about there's a real I just think it's magic when you watch the people who've become the puppets and their decisions on what they're going to help you with. And sometimes they're really keen to help you and sometimes they're reluctant, but then suddenly they'll pop up and they're doing things a little bit before you need to do them.
I find them adorable in there because they're sort of an underdog, but they also have the power and it's confusing. They didn't ask to be there. There's like perfect clowns as soon as they've got, and they're liberated because they're not really themselves.
It's like you wearing the monkey suit. They feel they can enjoy being a stand-up comedian. They can enjoy getting the laughs, and they're getting real genuine laughs. And it's just from, you couldn't, if you wrote it down, it wouldn't make any sense. If you went into a TV company and said, this is going to be funny, I'm going to put this mask on a woman and she's going to be a theology student, and believe me, it's going to be great because she'll pretend to be a kangaroo or something and it'll be great. You won't believe it. But if you explained it, it wouldn't be funny. But to watch it, the subtlety of it is so great, and just the human truth of it, I think, is amazing. But it's really interesting, the stuff you've done around it as well, and the shows that you've created, and the sort of You're doing a new podcast, which we should talk about.
Yes, I'm doing a podcast which isn't ventriloquism, and I'm working with Shanoa Allen from The Pajama Men.
Brilliant.
And we did these characters called Richard and Greta. And when you start doing a character, you know you found something when you can't stop. You know, you can't stop the character, and it just keeps coming back. You can't put down the accent. That's really exciting. That's the first thing I've kind of created that isn't ventriloquism in a long time. And it doesn't feel that different because, again, it's a vehicle of a character that can say things that I can't say. Very excited about that. That's going to be out hopefully same time this goes out, when it goes out.
Yes, yeah. Okay, we'll look out for that. But you were an actor to begin with, so, and you are, you still do act every now and again, but it's, did you miss acting, or did you think this was the, because it's such, you would never have predicted when Ken gave you this puppet and said, get on with this and have a go at this, you wouldn't have predicted you'd still be there in, you know, 15 years' time or whatever.
No, I just thrown it across the room and go, what do you mean? I'm just going to do this for the summer.
Yeah. Or to have made a career, you know, it's your proper career. You know, it's insane in a lot of ways, but it's amazing.
I still feel like customs in America, when you used to be able to go there and they'd say, what do you do? And I would say, oh God, I say I'm a ventriloquist. And it sounds so weird coming out of my mouth. I think, am I really? That was a weird life choice. And then twice, they've said, do some. I'm like, oh my God, are you not going to let me in the country if I don't do some? I'm like, oh, I can't. It's not good. I haven't got my puppet. And they're like, oh, show me a bit. And I think, shit, I better. They're wearing a uniform. So I go, hello. And they look at me like that. You know, you're not.
They must be in customs. They must be more interested because they, you know, they spend a lot of time putting their hands up people's asses anyway. So it's the next step in it. They're just going, if only I could just do a voice while I was doing this.
Oh my God. Oh, that's human perpetrino. I never want to think about it.
That's when you sweat back. When COVID's over, that's not a COVID. You can't do that during COVID. That act.
No, but as soon
after
as
COVID's over, right up
right
there.
Right in, up to the mouth. Oh my God. And then look at their face and see what you think they'd say.
What do you do? You've gone insane. She's killing me. She's killing me.
God, I can't wait.
Oh, dear. And let's talk about some stuff that isn't. I just want to talk to you about ventriloquism, and it's my show. That's what's great. Next week, I've got Dr. Sophie Hay on, who's an expert on Pompeii, just because I like Pompeii. And I'm going to talk about Pompeii for a whole week. Hold out.
Week? It's great.
Whole week. I probably would do it for a week. I can do ventriloquism for a week. I would talk. You did philosophy. You got a first in philosophy at the University of East Anglia.
I did, yeah.
You got a first, though. So do you know what the meaning of life is?
No.
They can't give you a first if you don't know.
With philosophy, I guess it's not that different from ventriloquism because you're posing, it's question and answer, isn't it? It's like upping the, trying to get to the truth by art. Yeah. I should stop doing gestures because I forget that this is not always going to be with picture.
Right.
But yeah, I think I then got honoured by the university that I went to, and they were trying to link in the speech ventriloquism to philosophy. And I think he did quite a good job because it was to do with ecstasis or ecstasy, which is like a throwing out of the idea. That's what ecstasy is, and I guess that's what monkey is. You throw out an idea and then you argue it, and so it's not that. Yeah, it turns out there was a similarity. I used to make a joke like once I was a philosophy student, now I'm a ventriloquist, like it was a disaster. But I guess it's sort of like a direct route.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing. I think, but you've got a very, like a lot of people who into philosophy are quite serious and, you know, and worn down by life.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem to have happened to you. You seem to be very positive about life.
Oh, God, I am, I think. I mean, this is a hard time, obviously. No, I don't even want to spend too long on where we are in the world right now, but it is grim and it's very easy to get sad. But there's like there's this mantra of, you know, you'll be all right. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep going. You know, we have to. Yeah. It's just too much bleak otherwise. And you, when you see, it's funny, the things that make me cry are just like these little efforts of someone singing or something right now. Can really get me. Actually, I've forgotten what it was that made me cry. There was something I saw and it made me cry. It was a gig or, well, what was it even? I haven't done enough gigs and I can't remember. Sorry, that's a really bad story.
That's okay.
But I found myself sort of crying at somebody making a joke or singing a song or something because I just thought, oh, it's nice. Oh, sorry, this is real wank. can we forget?
We can't
that
edit that. I'm going to go on for longer.
No, there's no way we're taking it out. Yeah.
But I think it's not, you know, I think that positivity, that's, I think you have to stay positive through, life is so weird and surreal. And I think you either get, I think the people who take, I think, I feel like you take it, life as, you know, not seriously, but that you see the comedy in life.
I definitely try to. There's something like if your kid's unhappy or there's something like that's very real and close to you and painful, it's really hard then. And when I'm writing my autobiography, the, like the sad bits, you know, I find myself moaning. But if you can't like get beyond and look back at it with some sort of joke, I mean, that's the striving, I think. You've got to keep doing that. But I don't know. I don't think I'm like really cheery. Like my mother's so cheery. She will not let in anything sad and it enrages me. I can't stand her cheerfulness, but it's something that I also love about her, you know, and one day when she's not here anymore, I'll just think about her sunny nature and weep and think, why was I such a bitch to her?
On Richard Herring's podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just sort of think, you know, I've been reading it. Someone has offered me a guest who's a kind of astrophysicist who I might get on, but I might not. But I've been reading his book. He thinks that that asteroid that went through the solar system a few years ago might have been some alien artifact, right? So it's sort of a slightly... But he's quite a serious guy. But
right.
But I think I know the universe is like really big, and I know that logic tells us there should be intelligent life somewhere else. I think this is an accident, and I think there's only one planet where this has happened.
Only one Richard Herring.
I think there's only one of me. Even if the universe is infinite, I don't think there's intelligent life anywhere else. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's a bit of a downer. I prefer to suppose there is, but you know, I've got no grounds for it, but it is big.
I know, but just the chances of that's what
I mean, not that intelligent, maybe.
The chances of being alive, the chances of being, you know, the way that humanity understands so much about the universe and can do so many things, it's so dependent on so many accidents.
Yes.
And you know, and the dinosaurs were here for hundreds of millions of years and could easily have stayed here for hundreds of millions of years more, we wouldn't be here. But all these accidents that have led to us getting to this point, having hands and things, you know, all these things that haven't happened to other animals, even if they were intelligent enough, they wouldn't be able to manipulate the world in the way we can. I don't think there's anything else out there. I think it's just us.
Well, I mean, you probably should ask the astrophysicist this question, no, not the ventriloquist.
He hasn't got a first in philosophy.
Wrong.
It's depressing to think it. Is it?
I think you're wrong. I still think I mean, Ken Campbell,
he
when
thinks
I said,
that there definitely has to be.
He thinks there has to
be. I think he's wrong.
Well, I mean, I also think you can't stop looking and you can never prove otherwise. So you have to suppose it's possible, but on some level, probably. I don't know. Ken Campbell, when I said, what's your take on life after death? He just said, I'm all for it. And I thought that was like about right. You know, never mind whether it's true. I was to bore me with whether I think it's true or not. I'm all for it. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's
okay.
I'm all for there being so. Yeah,
I'd like there to be. I'd love it if there were aliens, but I just sort of think there might. It might just be where this, you know, not even billion, 100 trillion million billion 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 to one chance, and that to me takes the pressure off a little bit. I don't think it. You know, that it's an accident.
It doesn't put the pressure on. We're the only intelligent.
No, off. Because, like, it doesn't matter. We're not meant to be here. It's an accident. People take life too seriously. And even given we're here, we shouldn't, you and me shouldn't be here. The chances of you, Nina Conti, existing.
No, definitely. Are
infinitesimally small.
Yes, very small, very much. Very lucky. We're on a knife edge, really. Yeah. But the thing of that lying on your back, looking at the stars, that kind of, you know, being stoned and looking at stars on a summer night and thinking how big it is and what's out there. You know, I don't ever want that to be taken away. That's the best bit of life, when you get those little openings where you think, ah, it's big. You know, those bits, that's the stuff I live for, I think, is the freak
it's
out
it's still
moments.
Big. There's no, it's definitely big. There's no question of it being big, but yeah. I don't, even if there is anything out there, I think I saw something, there was a tweet from the Voyager spacecraft, which has been flying out of the solar system for quite a long time now, 30, 40 years or something like that. It's been going. It's 17 light hours away from Earth. Just pathetic.
Yes.
It's been going
I know,
for
but
so
it's
long.
It's very big.
It's not even, it's not even one
than...
light day away.
I don't think it's anywhere pathetic. Near, but you, how can you stop looking at the other bits that are way outside the bits we're talking about?
You can look, but you can't touch. That's my mantra.
Yeah. You can't put your hand in it.
You can't. You're not allowed to put a face on it and try and make it talk. That's all you're interested in.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Mm. Well, did you ever, like, there's a few things that came up, and I know some of these were for programs and documentaries you're working on. Did you ever, you were threatening to learn to do Mongolian throat singing. Is that something you have taken up, or has that not happened yet?
It happened a bit when I was giving birth. That's when that came good. But it was that was another thing that Ken goaded me into and sent me off to learn Tuvan throat singing without telling me what it was. You know, I didn't even really know what I was. I just turned up some bloke's house in Forest Hill. He had loads of teeth. He seemed to have more rows. And when he took me, there was all like fag butts and stuff in this house. And then he sort of started this singing that had two notes in it. And I was really freaked out. And I thought, this must be something to do with all those teeth. But then he taught me. And then I gave it a go for a while. I'm not very good at it.
No.
That thing.
So you can harmonize with yourself. Is that?
Yeah,
is that...
you harmonize. Yeah.
Well, that would be useful to be able to do that, though. Right?
Well, it's good for pushing a baby out. It controls the breathing. Gives you something else to focus on. Yeah. Okay. I
were you tempted while you were giving birth to ventriloquize the baby as it was coming out?
No, I didn't.
No, so you're not that committed, are you? You're not so committed.
No, not that committed.
That's what if I could have a baby, that's what I would do. I'd
straight away.
Straight out. And they go, oh, hello, this is my voice. That's what I would do. But
are you relaxing your face when you do the voice?
Am I relaxing? Let me have a look. Hello, it's me. I'm the daddy.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah,
I can do it. And like when I don't think about it, it's sort of almost better. I'm good with the, as I said, the Prince Andrew one's the easiest because he sort of mumbles. When I'm with Ali, I kind of do get swept away with it. And so I am reacting to what he's saying much more weirdly. So that's the one I'm sort of most comfortable talking with. I get annoyed by him and then I sort of wind him up and pretend I don't understand what he's saying. And then he gets annoyed with me. So,
yeah.
Because he knows I do know. And Giggle Doctor, this was for a clowning documentary. So
yes, I studied how to do clowning. I actually like clowning a lot. It doesn't have anything to do with circus clowns and creepy clowns. Like theatre clowning's like something about not faking what's funny and like being just you as stupid as you naturally are. It can be funny if you get it right. And it's just really such a holy grail. People become obsessed and go on these courses, almost like a cult. They can't get enough of it. I was very interested in it because the people who do it well are so funny. But I was very impressed by a film I saw about a clown who worked in a hospital in Denmark, and he really lifted the kids' spirits, and they would forget they were sick for a bit. And so I had this calling at the time to try and do this. And I was so bad at it. I just upset sick children and I had to excuse myself. It was hard because I had a camera crew with me, you know, and there I was going off into the hospitals to help the children, making a film about it. I mean, the ego, it needed a big slap down. And that really happened when one kid cried and I thought, this is awful. Get out.
But maybe that's good for like kids who are really sick because it goes, well, you know, that you're going to die, but at least you won't have to watch this anymore. So that's the, yeah. That you could go to those kids and the kids have a chance to survive and you could get a proper one.
But dressed all weird and I'd like go and try and pretend I was taking an interest in the water cooler or something, you know, you have to let the kid invite you in, you know, so you just creep around. Oh, it's bad. But then
well,
the ones
Patch Adams as well. There's a very
he's
poor
good,
film.
Patch Adams. Oh yeah, but the real Patch Adams is pretty wonderful. Does a TED talk pretty good. And as when the ones who are good at it, the Giggle Doctors are good at it, are transformative. So like a drop all kind of humour to get that in there. It is worth donating because the good ones are so good.
Sure, but you're not one of the good.
I wasn't.
So there's something.
I wasn't.
Something
I was. Must have been bringing my ego. You know how they say with animals, they can tell if you're pure of heart. like chimpanzees, they don't like assholes. They like nice people, and they can tell. And I think I think the kids were. They could tell I was pure of heart. That clown with the documentary crew. We don't.
I think what it is kids are able to. Kids are very good at sniffing out. Desperation. I'm too desperate with my kids. I want them to really think I'm funny and make them laugh.
Yeah.
And my daughter especially is not having any of it. So when I'm not trying too hard, she'll find me funny. But if I'm trying, maybe she's just a little bit cooler than I am, but she's like, you know, she's the high status one in our relationship already. My 5 to 6 year old daughter. I think they know when they're being, they're just good at sensing when something isn't quite right.
I mean, you can't laugh at need, really,
no.
Can you?
No.
It's too painful.
Yeah.
But So that's when a gig's not going well, it gets worse, is because of the need. Everyone wants it.
But the whole thing's a need. You know, that's it. It's the pretense, because the whole thing is obviously need. You know, any comedian, however cool, needs the audience to laugh at them and needs the audience to at least engage with the act in some way.
I guess need can be funny, but you know, in a relationship when somebody's getting their relationship's gone on the fritz and they call you up and go, but maybe they didn't take me because of this, and maybe, and you think, God, your need is going to make it fly. Or we have to control this need because it's so unattractive. I guess this is exactly the same with an audience who's need, you know, but then need, actually, if you are truly needy, it can. I guess it's funny. If you really
I think it can work, but yeah, I think on stage, maybe in real life.
In real life, it's no.
I was very needy. I was thinking about this, my early girlfriends. I was so intensely needy, and it never worked, you know. And I was just I was so serious about. I just, you know, 18, 19, 20, I just wish I could have been a frivolous and not cared about it, because it would have all worked out. But
yes.
Because I was like, this is so important and I love you and it's so important that we're together. And then, oh, we're not together. Oh, that lasted 3 days.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll move on to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
Heartbreak.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, dear.
It's tough. I don't know how you advise people, kids, you know.
Yeah.
Because then
they've got to live a life. They've got to live for 50 years and then go, oh, okay, I know how I do it now.
I know, but you don't want playing hard to get to be the way of life. That's awful, isn't it? Anyway.
Oh, look, let me just see if there's anything else I really need to talk to you about. Look, I put audiences, puppets. I wrote in my notes, fucking magic, I wrote.
Oh, that's lovely. Nina, thank you very much. I'm
fucking
very glad
magic.
You enjoyed it.
People should check it out online for the moment, and they must go and see you. Were you touring when the pandemic hit, or were you not on stage at that time? Were you?
I was about to go on tour to Australia. Yeah, I was about a week away from the flight. Yeah, and then there was going to be a dating show as well. I was doing a dating show with masks, like a Cilla Black with masks. But I may still do that in Edinburgh.
Oh,
if there
it will
is
come.
One.
That will. It'll come back.
Yeah. And then I also had another show with with Shanoa, where we were Shanoa and the buffalo. So I'm a full dressed buffalo now, and he's the human. So I became the puppet in a different act from my own.
Yes. So there's lots going on, and we will be back. God knows what it sort of that this feels. Just where we are, where we're recording this at the beginning of January, it does feel like it's stretching out ahead of us a little bit in terms of getting back into theatres, which will be the last. I always knew would be the last thing.
I feel like we're in a submarine and it keeps going lower, and you're asking, can we go up? And no, it keeps descending. It's claustrophobic.
But I think, you know, in a way, in a sense, I mean, I try and take the positives out of it as much as possible. Don't think I'm as positive as your mum, but I am quite a positive person. And there's lots of good things. But I think that huge fire through our lives will make us, when we get to the other side, I think, appreciate what we've got. And I think the first year of being back in the theatre is going to be extra magic. That is my prediction.
It's going to be extra magic. And the last gig I did was in Brighton Dome, and it was just barren to look at because it's such a gorgeous venue and it's all patched up, and then there were just like a skeleton smattering, all wearing masks. Not my masks, you know, like the COVID masks. And I thought, this is frightening. It's frightening to look at visually. It's barren. But they were so friendly, doubly friendly to make up for it, you know, from behind the masks, that I don't know, those little signs of life are very enchanting, you know, the ways we're trying to reach out.
Well, it's, you know, you keep doing what you're doing, Nina. I think the other thing I thought as I was researching you is, like, when I started doing these podcasts like eight, nine years ago, I was kind of, my attitude was, you know, why is everyone else doing so well? And, you know, I don't feel like I'm doing as well as I should be doing. And then having talked to loads of, and watched loads of other people's acts properly, you go, oh, the reason is because everyone else is really good. It's much better than I am. That's why, it's because they're much better. And now I'm much more comfortable with that. But what it's sort of so interesting to see, you know, there's so many people, so many comedians doing their own thing and working, you know, that it's very hard to keep on top of it all as a comedian or as a punter, I think. And you look at, and when you look at someone like you, and you've taken what you've done and you've run with it and been so creative with it, it's just astonishing. And I just doubly want to say it, just for all the stand-ups who have been sniffy to you, because what you're doing, and I'm repeating myself, but what you're doing is sort of so way beyond what most people are doing with their comedy, that do keep doing it. And we will be back. Is there one piece of ventriloquist advice you can give me as a fairly novice ventriloquist that you think will make me a better ventriloquist? Is there one secret you learned early on that was a stepping stone?
Well, the one I'd probably be interested, but you may already have done it. Turn off the camera, turn off the recording devices, and put away the notepad, and just you and the puppet alone have a conversation for its own sake. And see how far you go. Go deep, you know.
I haven't really done that yet. I occasionally rehearse. If I'm doing a song, I sometimes rehearse it with them. But that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because there's something horribly intimate about talking to the puppet when there's no audience at all. I mean, you really find the true nature of your desperation and loneliness of but also, I don't know, you have to do it properly. I don't know. That's pure ventriloquism. I would say that. Is there anything else, like on a technical note, keep your face relaxed and don't sweat the P's and the B's, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just say the replacement letters.
I can grow
no
a beard, which is quite that. So this, when I'm shaved, which I am sometimes at the moment, this bit of skin wobbles around a bit. So if you can grow a beard, it's a good snood. I could put a snood on.
Yeah. Put a snood on and grow the moustache longer. And Malcolm Hardy used to put a paper bag over his head, didn't he, and do the worst ventriloquist in the world act.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the shortcut.
I'll try that if all else fails. Look, absolutely lovely to talk to you. Good luck with the new podcast. We will look out for that.
Thank you. It's called Richard and Greta. Let me get that in there one more time.
Richard and Greta, we will look it out. And if it's out by the time this is out, then we'll put a link on. If not,
lovely.
Just Google that and it'll come up eventually, I am sure. Ladies and gentlemen, the fantastic Nina Conti. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
See you again next week. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you. Bye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Nina Conti. Thank you to Pest, who play this wonderful music. I'm indebted to my friend and producer, Chris Evans, not that one, who does so much to keep this going. Thank you very much, Christopher. I would also like to thank Acast and Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide and everyone else who knows me. Thank you also to Kathleen McKeegan for some research and the excellent Rahulastapa.com website. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Hey, why not head to GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger and help us make even more content for you. Do check out my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/RKHerring, for almost nightly fun, if you think 3 out of 7 nights is night. Which it is, so fuck you. See you later, bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.